not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lifes of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome back. It's a Wednesday. I love it when we start the week on a Wednesday. I hope you had a nice long holiday weekend. Can I just say, to start things off, I hate the 4th of July. Don't hate that it's Independence Day. I think, you know, what a wonderful holiday. But just think what we escaped from. Universal health care. But that aside, no, what I hate about the 4th of July are all the amateur firework shows. And if you are a dog person like I am, a lot of dogs really, really, really freak out on the 4th of July, mine included. Poor Jackson. He freaks out when there's thunder. And so, and we get this time of year, we get a lot of thunderstorms here in South Florida. But the 4th of July fireworks, and we have some new neighbors across the street. Last year, they did it. They had a party, and out on the, we're sort of on the main drag through our subdivision, and there's an, you know, a median in the middle. And last year they had a party, and they were lighting off fireworks and going nuts, and I was dreading it. Sure enough, they did it again last night. And so, but poor Jackson went nuts every time there was even the littlest firecracker to the big booms. So it was hours last night of boom, bark, boom, bark, boom, bark. And yeah, so sleep didn't come too easily last night. Aside from that, if you were listening to the show on, shelters hate the 4th of July as well, animal shelters, because this is the time, the day of the year when more dogs run away. They get so freaked out by the noises, they run, they take off, and they wind up in animal shelters. So, yeah, hopefully if your dog is missing, you'll find them at the local shelter. Leave the fireworks to the experts. They put on beautiful displays. And, you know, the other advantage is you're not going to blow off a hand or an arm or a leg or anything like that. Not fun. So I'm glad that's over with. Except now we'll get the residuals for the next few nights, you know, the few remaining fireworks, excuse me, that people didn't light off yet. Hopefully we'll spend the next hour relatively unscathed because it's still light out. All right. Now, the other reason the weekend was a rough one for me, if you heard the show on Friday, you heard my story that I was going to detox. I'm just over a year away from when I was diagnosed with lung cancer, and my surgery was on the 30th of August, right? So, I had pretty extensive surgery and was in considerable amount of pain. And of course, the drug of choice, what they give you, is some form of an opioid. So I was on Percocet or Vicodin, one or the other. And, for many months, and it kept the pain at bay. But what happens is I watch the news, I'm seeing all these horror stories about people who started their opioid addiction from something like that. They had surgery, or they broke a bone, or they had some other accident or episode that caused them great pain, and they were prescribed opioids. Well, once you're on them, they're not easy to get off of. And so I have spent months, and I was never on a very high dose to begin with, but I'm somebody who, I'm not drug phobic. When I was a kid, I grew up in South Florida in the 70s, graduated from high school in 1977. So, you know, the class in the movie Dazed and Confused, that was my class. And we were like that. So, I tried a lot of drugs when I was a kid, never got addicted to anything. I always kept my mind about me and always was as responsible as one can be when they're taking illegal drugs, right? And never did enough to get myself in that kind of trouble. Well, when you're taking it for pain and it's a highly addictive medication, sometimes you don't have a choice. So some months ago already, I realized that I was physically dependent on these things. And the way I found out was I'd miss, you know, I had to take them every 4 hours. So I'm not the most disciplined person when it comes to, you know, setting the time and taking everything by the clock. My husband's the exact opposite. He's very ritualistic, but I'm not. I'm more, yeah, go with the flow. When I need it, I'll take it. And what I learned was I'd start feeling sick. I was going through these bouts where I felt like I was getting the flu, like get a bad headache. I feel just nauseous and just overall lousy. That was the only way I could describe it, where I'd have to lie down, you know, curl up in a ball. And what I realized is those bouts came about when I wasn't taking the pill on time. And I'd find out, I'd realize I'd feel like shit. I'd pop one of these pills. I'd lie down and curl up in a ball on my bed. And about 20 minutes later, lo and behold, I felt fine again. So I went through months of this, went to see a pain doctor, talked about, you know, getting me off, and we decided to gradually lower the dose. So it was a gradual step down in the dosage. You know, again, I was coming down off of a 10 milligram pill, and I think the lowest dose they prescribe is 5. So I'd cut the 10s in half, and then I'd do a full one, and then the next time a half a one, and then a full one and half a one. But it was it wreaked havoc with my, not only my body, but my mind, because, you know, the other part of it is I suffer from depression, and the opioids will fuck with that center in your brain as well. So it's been about, I want to say, a good 4 or 5 months I've been trying to get off these things. And they moved me from, I think it was from Percocet to something called Norco, because supposedly that was a little less potent. Then onto methadone. And the reason for the methadone is because it's longer lasting. So instead of having to take it every 4 hours, you can take it pretty much every 12 hours. So it was a 5 milligram methadone pill. And these things are tiny. And then I would try to break those in half. So I did the pill splitter, but it wasn't very accurate. And I would try to do one, you know, I'd take a half of one and take it 12 hours later and then try to go 24 hours. So I really built up to, or built down to, this weekend when I was just going to go cold turkey. And the reason I chose this weekend was because I knew I had 4 days off where if I was sick, I could just do nothing and lie in bed. And, you know, I got to tell you, I had my moments of feeling really, really shitty. Not as bad as if I hadn't kept stepping down and stepping down and stepping down. But bottom line is, I'm done. I'm done with the opioids. I will not go back on them. I think I may have an ibuprofen addiction coming up now. And I know ibuprofen is no, you know, great thing to put in your body too much either, but the pain is back. It's something, the opioids worked on the pain. It wasn't really there, but here I am. I'm in one piece, made it through the weekend, had a few, an uncomfortable weekend. We'll put it that way. I watched a few movies. I watched La La Land, which I don't get it. I don't know why it got all the rave reviews. I mean, it was an okay, musical. And I generally like musicals, but the music wasn't that great. The singing and dancing wasn't terrific. I would have rather watched, you know, The Music Man or something like that. But none of those were on TV. I rented, went to the, you know, the grocery store on Friday before this thing started and used the Red Box and rented that. Rented Jackie and Hidden Figures. Hidden Figures is a great movie that everybody should watch. Out of all of them, that was my favorite. Jackie, I didn't even finish. It was not good. It was really depressing at a time when, I was dealing with this stuff. It wasn't great. But anyway, that was my weekend. I hope yours was better. Hidden Figures, yes. Netflix can stream The Music Man. Can it, Lava Q, in the chat room? I'll have to go look because I could watch that again. I've seen it a million times. I love those old musicals, you know, Bye Bye Birdie and what are some of the others? I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. I even like The Sound of Music. Go figure. I grew up on those things. Anyway, I tried not to watch too much news. Because the news over a long holiday weekend is not news. It is whatever the latest diversion is. Of course, Donald Trump didn't disappoint. He was all over the Twitters. There was still the Joe and Mika thing that was going on. And but then Trump decided to tweet out a GIF. Is it a GIF or a GIF? I always get it mixed up. GIF, I think, is how you say it. Of him, Donald Trump, a bit younger than the current Donald Trump, at a wrestling match, slamming somebody with the CNN logo over his head. Somebody made this, and Donald Trump, it got in his Twitter stream, and he retweeted it. And that was the news of the weekend. Was it juvenile and childish and immature and unbecoming of a president? Yes. But Donald Trump is all those things, juvenile and childish and unbecoming of a president. Who would expect anything different? He sees that. Of course he's going to retweet it. Well, this morning, again, the day after a holiday, still not much news except for the couple of big stories like, you know, North Korea. Yeah, we'll get there. The big story now is the fake news about the channel that they call fake news. You see, the Trumpets, that's what I'm going to call them now, Trump's followers, the Trumpets, are all up in a tizzy because they're saying that CNN blackmailed the guy who originally made the GIF and then posted it on Reddit, which I don't read it. I don't read it, Reddit. I never figured out how to navigate it, and I guess it's just as well. So so this guy made up the GIF, and posted it on Reddit and tweeted it out to Donald Trump, who retweeted it. And CNN, with their sleuthing, figured out who it was. And that's all. But the Trumpets are now claiming that CNN is blackmailing this guy who they claim is a 15-year-old boy. He isn't. They're claiming that CNN blackmailed him, that he had to apologize and take it down and do, I don't know what they alleged was part of the blackmail, but CNN issued a statement. And the statement says, CNN decided not to publish the name of the Reddit user out of concern for his safety. Any assertion that the network blackmailed or coerced him is false. The user, who is an adult male, not a 15-year-old boy, one of the Trump spawn tweeted out that it was a 15-year-old boy. Go figure. The user apologized and deleted his account before ever speaking with our reporter. CNN never made any deal of any kind with the user. In fact, CNN included in its decision to withhold the user's identity in an effort to be completely transparent that there was no deal. But this is all, if you go on Twitter, this is all you see. You know, I've blocked any right-wingers who follow me or did follow me, so I don't see a lot of their stuff in my feed, but others retweet them. So I it's all over the place that CNN is blackmailing this 15-year-old kid. This is what passes for news at a time when there's no news because it was a long holiday weekend. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, yeah, the fake news about the channel they call fake news is fake. Go figure. There was other news. Chris Christie. The wrestling was real. Oh, no, the wrestling's not real. Music Man was on last night on TCM. Oh, well, 1:15, I've got a DVR. I always miss it. I should put up an alert if we have DirecTV. See, you know, when it's, I know it almost by heart. Gary, Indiana. Sorry, I shouldn't do that. But if you haven't seen The Music Man, set up an alert and watch it when it comes on. I'm telling you, you would think watching it with and watching Professor Hill that there might be hope for Donald Trump yet, but he's not going to fall in love with Marion, the librarian, and make the world right again. So maybe not. But it's a good diversion for a few hours, and it's better than La La Land. Okay. So what else? Oh, Chris Christie went to the beach, which normally would be nothing I want to see, but the pictures are everywhere. And that's because the beach that he went to was a state beach park where there are a few houses. I believe there are six houses. One of the houses there is one of the perks of being governor. Except what happened is because they couldn't come to a budget settlement, so government shut down for 3 days in New Jersey. So all the state parks and state beaches were closed, including this strip of beach where this governor's house was. Well, the other houses that are there, these people who owned them were grandfathered in so they could keep their houses. There were no service. There's no electricity. They have to power their own homes with generators and stuff. They're all self-contained, but they were grandfathered in. The citizens who owned those homes, those other five homes, I don't know how many people were there for the weekend, but on Friday night, they were told to leave under threat of arrest if they did not vacate the premises, except Chris Christie didn't vacate the premises. Well, Chris Christie, you see, this is what happens, and this is what happened should happen to Donald Trump. When you diss the people that you're supposed to be representing, your approval rating goes down the toilet. Chris Christie is now sitting at 15%, the lowest ever in history for a governor of New Jersey. Yeah. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is headed to Poland. Well, and then Germany. But he stops in Poland first, and he's going to deliver a speech in Warsaw tomorrow, written by Stephen Miller. This can't go over well. But what gets me in the speech, considering that it's written by Stephen Miller, it is alleged to praise the nationalistic example of Poland. Well, what I heard shortly before coming on the air, I don't know that it's 100% true, but I believe the source, that the members of the Polish parliament were told each to bring 50 pro-Trump people to the speech. So he has a pro-Trump audience there. This is nationalism. This is authoritarianism. This is the kind of thing that Trump loves. He just wants to be adored. Then he goes on to Germany for the G20, where he'll meet with Vladimir Putin. And what we know is it's looking like he will not bring up Russia's interference in our elections or the elections of any other country, because we're not the only ones they like to stick their Russian fingers into. It is only July of 2017. We got a long time to deal with this. And the question is how things get any better. We've talked a lot about voting problems in this country. We've talked about voter suppression. We've talked about the efforts on the part of the Republicans to do away with the Voting Rights Act. In fact, I believe Ari Berman is going to be on the show on Friday. You know, he wrote the book on that. He also has a huge piece in the New York Times Magazine about Kris Kobach and what are they calling it? The Voter Fraud Commission that Trump has appointed Mike Pence to lead and Kris Kobach, the Secretary of State of Kansas, to be the vice chair of. And basically, to my ears, it sounds like Kobach's interstate cross-check, just on a more massive scale. We have the expert on that coming up today in a few minutes. Greg Palast will be here. So here's what we'll do. We'll listen to What's News. We'll deal with it. And I'm going to play for you a very short interview between Kris Kobach and Ali Velshi. Ali Velshi, I like him on MSNBC. He was trying to get to it, but then, of course, they got interrupted by a shooting. What else? It never ends. Just never ends. But stick around, because Greg Palast, he of the fedora, is on the show today. So don't go away. We'll be right back. I read the
news today. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The U.S. asserted that North Korea's latest missile launch was indeed an intercontinental ballistic missile. Kim Jong-un said it was a 4th of July gift to the Trump administration, while Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called it a, quote, new escalation of the threat to the United States. The president responded, as he tends to do, on Twitter, tweeting, quote, North Korea has just launched another missile. Does this guy have anything better to do with his life? Hard to believe that South Korea and Japan will put up with this much longer. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. Trump departs from the U.S. to Europe on Wednesday morning, first stopping in Poland before heading on to Germany for the G20 summit of industrial and emerging market nations. In Poland, leaders are looking for reassurance that the presence of U.S. and NATO troops will continue as long as the region's security is threatened by Russia. In Germany, Trump will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday, in which there is allegedly no set specific agenda, though saner minds are hoping he'll address allegations of interference in U.S. elections. Newspapers around the nation used the 4th of July to editorialize against the president's new voter fraud commission, accusing the White House of fostering voter suppression under the guise of cracking down on a virtually non-existent problem. The commission was created by executive order in May, but in a letter last week sent by Vice Chair Kris Kobach, requested that states provide troves of personal voter data to the panel. NBC's Hallie Jackson explains.
It's the Election Integrity Commission. This was created after President Trump claimed, you remember several months ago, that millions of people had voted illegally. He said this without providing any evidence, without providing any backup documentation to that. It is a claim that virtually all voting experts say is simply not true. But the president created this commission to look into what he described as voter fraud. What's happening now is you're seeing a growing number of states. By our count, nearly half of states so far, many with Democratic voting officials installed, eight with Republican ones, saying they're not going to give some of this data because the commission, in a letter that we obtained last week, says it wants not just voter roll data, but also last four digits of the Social Security number, information about past convictions, dates of birth, etc. And some states are now saying, listen, we're not going to give you all of that. You can take the public stuff, but we're not going to be helping you out by providing you some of this sensitive data from people who live in our state. The pushback from the White House is that the backlash is kind of a political stunt. I talked with one White House official who said, hey, some of these states, like Indiana, for example, home of Mike Pence, who leads this Election Integrity Commission, are still going to provide, they believe, publicly available data, just not all of the data that has been requested. And one person said to me, we're still in the beginning of this process.
Alison Lundergan Grimes is Kentucky Secretary of State, and she explains why she won't be turning over her state's data.
If Donald Trump asked for not only your address, but your date of birth, your political affiliation, and your entire voting history, along with the last four digits of your Social Security number, would you give it to him? The answer from Kentucky and from states around the United States is resounding no. Indeed, there is no state that is fully complying with what has been a request from a sham commission that the president set up to try to create and find evidence to back up a lie that has simply been disputed bipartisan around the board that 3 to 5 million people voted in the last election. And Kentucky is not going to participate in what is at best a waste of taxpayer dollars, and at worst, one of the largest voter suppression efforts that we've seen nationwide.
The New York Times wrote, quote, as the nation marks 241 years of independence, the most pressing voting issue should be getting those tens of millions of non-participating Americans registered and to the polls so that their voices can be heard. If the paranoid voter fraud crusaders devoted a fraction of their inquisitorial energy to solving that vexing problem, now that would be something to celebrate. The Chicago Sun-Times opined that the commission is a political tool, quote, looking for any scrap of information that might support Trump's unfounded claim that millions of people illegally cast ballots in 2016, adding that in doing so, Trump's commission, quote, would further efforts to suppress the vote in future elections. More fallout from Chris Christie's day at the beach as NewJersey.com reports that the five other residents of Island Beach were ordered out of their homes Friday night under threat of arrest, while the Christie clan stayed put and frolicked in the surf while the state beach was officially closed.
Now, it didn't, Claude, but go ahead. I didn't get any sun today. No. No, there's no one at Island Beach State Park. There are no lifeguards. There's no one to pick up the garbage. There's no one providing any services at Island Beach State Park. Next. I'm done. We're talking about the closure of government, and you're talking about your TMZ stuff.
With a 15% approval rating, Governor Christie has the distinction of being the lowest rated governor in New Jersey's history. Speaking of polls, according to a new SurveyMonkey poll published by Axios, 50% of Americans trust CNN more than they trust President Donald Trump. Gallup's tracking poll has Trump's approval rating at 37% to start off July, with his disapproval rating standing at 57%. And things have gotten so bad for Trump that more people support impeaching him than support the job he's doing. PPP found that 47% of voters supported impeaching the president, with 49% believing the president obstructed justice in the investigation into his ties with Russia. And that's a bit of what's news for today. If you appreciate what we're doing, I hope you'll check out the Nicole Sandler Show Tuesdays through Fridays from 3 to 4 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com and right here on the Progressive Voices Network.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
All right. Before we get Greg Palast on the line, I told you I'd play a little bit of this interview with Ali Velshi and Chris Kobach. Ali Velshi is really good, and he tried. He really tried.
He's talking about the tweet by President Trump who said that he won the popular vote, which he didn't, when you take into account all the illegal fraudulent votes. You seem to support that view. Well, on what evidence?
Well, the president's statements in January and February, the commission isn't put in place to prove or disprove that. We may never know whether that's true or not. But the point of the commission is just to get information and present it to the public. And I want to respond to something that Secretary Padilla just said.
Sure.
He said that this is sensitive information. No, this is publicly available information. The commission is only requesting what any person on the street in California can walk into a county election office and get. So if Social Security number is not publicly available, and it is not publicly available in most states, then we aren't requesting it.
So why'd you ask for it?
Well, because if it is publicly available, then if the public can get it, then the commission would like it, too. In most states, it's not. You want to avoid false positives.
I hear you. What are you trying to get at? You're asking for people's names,
sure.
Initials, middle initials, date of birth, whatever. That's normal, right?
Most states are going to give name, date of birth.
Right. Then you want political party. You want voter history. And information regarding felony convictions and information regarding voter registration in another state, information regarding military status and overseas citizen information. What are you going to do with all that information?
Okay, well, let me give you an example.
Yeah.
The Pew Charitable Foundation, one of their trusts, has estimated that 1.8 million deceased individuals are on the voter rolls in the country, and they think that their estimate is low. Well, we could actually find out what the real number is if we take the voter rolls of the states and we match them against the Social Security Administration's death list of people who have died. Mm-hmm. Let's find out what the real number is. And then if you have the voter history, you can say, okay, how many of these names appear to have voted after the date of death?
Right.
So let's just imagine
that's
the actual numbers.
Except you
that's
got
very
it.
Interesting. And why not find out?
Because you got this wrong. You actually went after a particular voter who you said was dead and voted in an election, and it turned out that the guy was very much alive, and I think a newspaper found him mowing his lawn.
Right. That case actually proves the point. That was back 6 or 7 years ago when I was running for the election. There's a guy's name in the Kansas voter rolls, and the Kansas voter rolls had a mistake listing his date of birth as 1901, but he was still voting in, I think, 2006 or something like that. So the problem was in the voter rolls. So there are lots of errors in every state's voter rolls. Let's find out how significant those errors are. Let's find out how many deceased people are on the rolls. Let's find out how many cases where someone's a deceased individual has actually voted. And let's find out how many aliens are on the voter rolls. California has been accused by many people in the country of being very lax in allowing non-citizens to register. Well, we can find out. Maybe it'll turn out that there are very few. Maybe it'll turn out that there are a large number. But my question is, what's Secretary Padilla afraid of? Why not look at the data, it's publicly available data, and put the cards on the table and show the American public how significant the issue is? It's just fact-finding.
Okay, well, and they got cut short because there was another shooting somewhere. But we'll tell you, actually, our next guest will tell you what the problem with that is, Chris Kobach. Our guest is, of course, Greg Palast. He's an investigative reporter. His news-breaking stories appear on BBC, The Guardian, Rolling Stone magazine. His new movie is The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and it's even been revised to deal with the Trump election. You know, Donald Trump said the election is rigged, and Palast says Donald should know because his buddies rigged it. Well, the film follows Greg Palast on his investigation of those wild claims. And along the way, Palast finds billionaires gone wild, a secret hit list of a million Americans who lost their vote. And that's, I think, what we're going to zero in on now. Hello, Greg Palast. Are you there?
Hey, Nicole Sandler, I am here and thrilled to be with you.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Are you surprised that all of a sudden we're seeing Chris Kobach all over the place and people are finally talking about the story that you've been telling us about for years?
You know, I released my film saying that Chris Kobach was going to design the vote-stealing methods which would steal the election for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They did it.
Yep.
Okay, so now I'm revising the film and adding new information, but the new subtitle, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, will be, I Told You So, So Now This Time Pay Attention. So, yes, Chris Kobach, I've been saying he is Trump's vote thief in chief. And since we last spoke, since the film has gone out, he's been named to Trump's so-called Election Integrity Commission. which is like asking Al Capone to investigate the mob. Okay, so, but what's even worse is Kobach is using this post specifically to expand the vote suppression games he was playing as Secretary of State and in coordination with other GOP Secretaries of State. In a few minutes ago, the Progressive magazine at the top of its online site at progressive.org just published a story of mine about 3 minutes ago.
Oh, good. I went looking for
saying
it before.
Explaining that while when Kris Kobach said to all 50 states, turn over your voter files, there was all this reaction. 44 states said, no way, because there's this huge public outcry. And including one guy I thought was a real treat, the secretaries of state of Mississippi and Louisiana, they were actually vicious. How dare he ask for our voter files? These GOP guys protecting, like the GOP secretary of state from Mississippi said that they can go jump in the Gulf of Mexico. Mississippi is a great place to launch from. We Mississippi residents should celebrate Independence Day and our state's right to protect the privacy of our citizens by conducting our own electoral processes. What he didn't say, this petty little liar, is that he'd already turned over the list.
Already.
The entire voter file in Mississippi was already sent to Kris Kobach in January. Kobach only asked him because he's sending the letter to all 50 states as a cover.
Right.
28 states have already sent him the voter files. Remember, he's wearing two hats. He's got two heads. I've met him, I can tell you. and two faces, certainly. In one, he is the vice chair, effectively running the Trump's Federal Advisory Commission. The other, he is Secretary of State of Kansas.
Right.
And in that capacity, he created a little group, a little scheme called CrossCheck. Mm-hmm. Remember when Trump said 3 million people were voting twice? That came from Kris Kobach. Kobach got 28 states to send them their voter rolls over, you know, like 110 million, 130 million now voters from those voter rolls. So he got like 130 million voter rolls files, including your last four of your Social Security number, your birth dates, your voting histories, etc. And from that list, he mushed those together and came up with a list of people who voted twice or at least registered to in two different states.
Allegedly.
To vote in the same election,
right.
Which is a federal crime.
Right.
And here's the deal. He found 3 million double voters, supposedly. But let me read you, Nicole, just a couple of the names. You'll see this in the progressive.org article. For example, in Georgia, Barbara Ann Jackson voted once, and then she voted again in Virginia, but as Barbara Faye Jackson. Billy Ray Jackson is supposed to be the same voter. He's in Georgia as the same voter as Billy Manuel Jackson, Jr. You got the whole Jackson 5 here, or the Jackson 5000. Basically, they took a bunch of common black, Hispanic, and Asian names, and said these, you know, David Kim has voted all over the place, Jose Rodriguez, James Brown. 500 James Brown in Georgia supposedly voted in other states because, believe it or not, they found a guy named James Brown in Detroit.
Amazing.
And a guy named James Brown
Amazing.
In Arizona.
Amazing.
You know? Yeah. And so now these guys are lying because they're saying that they would never turn over the list to Kobach, and they did. Now, it's a game to say, let's not play games here and say, oh, well, one goes to the commission and one goes to the Secretary of State's office, the cross-check. No. He can use those lists. He can take the federal lists and dump them into the cross-check database.
Mm-hmm.
He would have the absolute right to do that. And that's what he wants to do.
But so he's asking, Greg, he's asking for, you know, middle initial for the last four digits of your Social Security number. You can't have the Barbara Jackson and Barbara Kay and Barbara Faye are two different people with two different middle names and ostensibly two different Social Security numbers. So how does he make the case that they're the same person?
Well, two things. I asked him that. He wouldn't talk to me at first. So if you see the film The Best Democracy Money Could Buy, you'll see that I fly to Kansas, to Wichita. He's having an ice cream social.
I'm sorry.
By the way, only vanilla. It's a Republican fundraiser. And I'm kidding you not. And so I jump him I have a little microphone in my hand with one of those cubes that the local TV guys have with the number four on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I look like the, like local Channel 4.
Right.
In fact, I was actually working with Channel 4 of Britain, so it was legit.
Okay.
And I get in with the press conference, and then I start asking him about, wait a minute, you've got these lists. You're accusing people of voting twice. And look at these lists. And he said, that wouldn't be on my list. I said, I hate to tell you, you know, I'm Greg Ballas. I'm an investigative reporter. I've got your list, buddy. I've got a million of your names, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here's your list. Here's a printout, okay? I couldn't bring him the whole thing. It'd be weighed 92 pounds, but I brought him several sheets of these names and said, explain this. And I said, and how, if you do have their Social Security numbers and you do have their middle names, why are you listing these people as suspected double voters? And he said, oh, first, and when I jumped him, he said, I would, that's not true. I would never do that. And I said, here it is. Later, he called me back realizing I'd caught him in a lie.
Mm-hmm.
He was lying straight to me. And by the way, I was doing this writing for Rolling Stone magazine. And he realized I was going to call, you know, identify him as a liar in Rolling Stone. He still is. So he said he was just trying to cast the widest net possible. Well, why would you cast a net over Billy Ray Jackson and put him in the net with Billy Manuel Jackson? You know it's not the same voter. The problem is these voters can lose their vote. In fact, in Virginia, and he also denied this, Virginia told me, they gave me in writing that 41,637 voters lost their vote because of the list that Kobach gave them. They removed 41,000 voters from the voter rolls in Virginia. And by the way, you might be saying, wait a minute, don't we have a Democratic governor in Virginia? Well, yeah, it was started by a Republican voting board, but now a Democrat's taken over. And weirdly, I'm having trouble getting straight information out of Terry McAuliffe's voter board. They're circling the wagons like a lot of bureaucrats do, but and Jesse Jackson and others are kind of in the NAACP and Civil Rights Center of Washington are all pounding on Virginia.
Good.
Like, first of all, give us the phony lists. Give us the names of the people you've removed and get out of this cross-check business. So I'm going to be very interested to see if McAuliffe, who gave a big fat statement saying, I would never, never turn over the voter rolls to this guy Kobach, and he did in January.
Unbelievable.
But it's mostly GOP guys that are lying about this.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I hate to say I've met with Terry McAuliffe. He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
I can see that. You know, 44 states have said no, they're not going to cooperate, or they'll only turn over what's easily, you know, publicly available. But I added 44 to 28, and that comes up with 72. And I know there are not 72 states. So a bunch of states are lying about this.
Yeah, well, we have 44 states who said that they're resisting.
Right.
Some of them, 44 states are resisting. Now, a lot of them are like California, you've heard, and others who are not on the cross-check list. I was just saying of the 44 resistors, there are 44 resistors. Half of them are Democrats, Democratic states. But of the Republican states, almost all of them, 16 of them, are on the cross-check. In the cross-check program and have already turned over their voter files. In fact, I have a chart in a nice map on progressive.org, millions of voter files that they said they wouldn't turn over. They did. So the Republicans are lying. It's that simple. They're just straight out lying. There are four Democratic states which are lying too. Like I say, McAuliffe's only excuse is that, you know, he's not all that right, and he doesn't seem to know what's going on in his own state. There's one state which is a battleground. The governor of North Carolina has said he's ordered his board of elections do not turn over these lists. He's the new Democrat who was just elected, but the voting board, the elections board, is Republican. They already turned over 6 million names to Kobach. So they've already done it. They go fly to the Democratic governor. It's a battle zone there. And there is a suit by the Reverend Barber.
I was just going to ask you about him. Awesome. Yeah. I just wrote down William Barber to ask you about him because the Reverend William Barber is awesome. And this is right up his alley. He's all about morality. And so good. If he's in the fight, that's a good one. So Greg
he's in the fight. And I just talked on Saturday morning with the Reverend Jesse Jackson. Push is going to make a big push against Crosscheck. I'll be at their, by the way, I'll be at their convention on July 14th and 15th in Chicago. Okay, that's a plug. If you want to get on the plane, I'll see you there. So we do have, and thank you, as one of the few pale-faced radio personalities willing to have me on the air.
Yes.
It's been a shame. You know, this is the problem. I'm on with Joy Reid or Al Sharpton on MSNBC.
Right.
But it's very hard to get these vote suppression issues discussed on pale face hosts on TV.
Well, that sucks.
We're trying to get that. You know, that's the other big problem we have. But there are lawsuits afoot. ACLU blocked it in California, and they're ready to join with me, use my information to sue in Georgia and other states. Common Cause. And I'm working with the Civil Rights Center of Washington, D.C. So there's action afoot, but the problem is that CNN just simply takes the word of these officials when they say they're not going to turn over the list. Well, yeah, I mean, California ain't turning over the list. New York ain't turning over the list.
Mm-hmm.
These GOP guys want to pretend that they're protecting you.
What about in a state like Kentucky? I played in my What's News feature, Allison Lundgren Grimes, who was speaking very loudly and very forcefully against this. In fact, this was my favorite quote of hers.
You don't have to be from Kentucky to know that this smells a little funny. It smells a little bit like horse manure. There's something suspicious going on, and we want to make sure that we're moving our elections forward, not backwards. And I'm not about to put 3.3 million Kentuckians' information at risk.
Now, what about Kentucky?
She is telling the truth.
Oh,
bing! She wouldn't turn over the list. No.
Good. Well, that's good to know.
You know, not every Republican is in the tank with Kobach. Unfortunately, that there are enough. For example, Michigan. Michigan, and which is, you know, the swing state of swing states. Michigan turned over 7.4 million voter files. And I was up in Michigan right after Trump's election. Trump won Michigan supposedly by 10,700 votes. Okay, you've got a 500,000 Michiganders on Kobach's suspect list.
Wow!
I spoke to the Republican Secretary of State, and he was proud to say that he was aggressively using Kobach's list to remove voters. They don't remove all of them. You have to fail to send in that postcard. That also adds to bias because students move, poor people move, voters of color don't have a lot of money, they move around. White suburbanites don't move, so they get their mail. There's zero doubt in my mind and the experts I'm working with at Rolling Stone that Michigan was stolen by Crosscheck.
Wow.
And had an effect in other states like Ohio, Republican swing state, North Carolina, Arizona. These are states where, you know, there are other chicanery going on in that election, but this was part of the Crosscheck was part of the vote suppression mix. And I also have to say, you just are playing his fight over the lists because they have a second use. And he's talking about Alex Padilla, the Secretary of State of California, refusing to turn over the list. What they want to do, now let me explain this. They want to use, Kobach said this on Fox News, okay, so it's not hidden. Kobach has said he now has access to the Homeland Security files. which lists all the people that have been deported. He wants to match the deportation list to the voter files. Now, you may say, okay, yeah, we don't want the illegal aliens who have been deported and swum back here from Guatemala to vote in our elections.
Right, but that would be bad.
Given how this is how they handled, we know how they're handling that list, which is to say someone named, it was one of our experts said, if your name's Jose Garcia, you've been suspected of voting in 28 states.
Right.
And so what they do is they take the first name and last name. To give you an example, Florida, by the way, did this trick.
Yes.
Back when, and they took the Homeland Security deportation lists, and they took their voter rolls, and they tagged 181,000 people as possibly alien voters. What does that mean? Possibly alien. They made thousands of Hispanics, Latinos, go into courtrooms to prove that they were Americans. Now, a lot of people are just going to say, I'm not taking off a day from work to prove I'm an American. That's insane, and that's what they want to do. They want to take common, they're going to take people whose names have been deported, which are mostly Latinos, and they're going to say, aha, there's Jose Garcia on our voter rolls. He's going to have to prove he's an American citizen. By the way, prove you're an American citizen. How do you do that? This is not Red China. We don't have citizenship cards.
Right.
The only proof of citizenship, the main proof of citizenship in America is a
birth certificate, a passport.
And a passport is, you know, there ain't a lot of homies coming back from their vacation in the Alps with their passport.
No, that's true.
You can also get a certified copy of your original birth certificate. Good luck. And that's just a vote, okay? And we know who's getting killed by that. In Kansas, he pulled this stunt, Kobach, of saying you have to prove you're a citizen. 36,000 students at the University of Kansas in Lawrence and 36,000 people in the Lawrence area were not allowed to vote because they couldn't prove that they were citizens when they registered to vote because they didn't have that passport or that original birth certificate.
Amazing.
And they didn't want to mail in their original birth certificate either, right?
Right.
So a court overturned Kobach's edict removing these 36,000 voters, saying that he had violated the motor voter law, the National Voter Registration Act. We have a photo of the memo he gave to Donald Trump at Trump Tower, Chris Kobach, saying that they had to change the motor voter law so that you can require people to prove their citizenship. No one thinks that non-Americans should vote in our elections. However, that's a hell of a lot different than saying, prove you're a citizen. You know, that's Soviet Union stuff. That's Red China. That's Cuba. We don't do that stuff here, we thought.
Right. Now, let me ask the question. So what, you know, usually something like this would be undertaken when there's a huge problem out there. Is there such a problem with non-citizens voting? Do we have a number?
Oh, yeah. Well, Kobach, okay, there's two views.
Yes.
Kobach was arguing, you heard on MSNBC, because he is taking the position of a guy named Hans von Spakovsky, who was just appointed to Kobach's commission.
Okay.
He's this Heritage Foundation guy who says that there are literally over a million illegal voters, alien voters in America, that he says, what's interesting, his number, according to his calculations, Spakovsky, he actually says that aliens have a higher turnout rate than most Americans, than American citizens, by his calculation. I kid you not. Okay? So, I mean, these are, my God, if they're so enthusiastic, maybe we should make them citizens.
Yeah, no
but,
kidding.
But here's their problem. In the last 10 years, right, these people supposedly cast literally hundreds of millions of votes in various elections. They have convicted two people.
Exactly.
One in Florida who is a Austrian who registered Republican to vote for Jeb Bush, by the way. So where are these illegal aliens? By the way, if you wonder how they got the number, I've investigated this. This is, by the way, you're listening to Greg Pallas gassing on. And you have this, by the way, in my book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy,
yes.
Which is they took the number of They took border towns where there are a lot of Mexican, not Mexican Americans, but Mexican citizens who have U.S. licenses. And they said, oh, those people could vote because they could they get jury notices. And they counted all the jury notices where people said, we can't serve on a jury because we're not citizens.
Mm-hmm.
They said, aha, they assumed that those people then snuck in and voted. No. The reason why Mexicans at border towns have driver's licenses is because they drive cars, and they're required by our laws. If you are driving a U.S., if you are constantly driving across the U.S. border, you must have a U.S. driver's license.
Right.
And they use that. They extrapolated those cases into a million illegal voters.
And of course, you have Donald Trump. The it still hurts to say it. The president saying that 3 million people illegally voted for Hillary Clinton because if they hadn't, he would have won the popular vote.
What I'm concerned with is that I think too much attention has been paid to Trump's vanity.
Yes,
and it's pretty hard to not pay attention because it's like shining in your face every day.
Mm-hmm.
But the main issue for me is not that Kobach is trying to prove that Trump won the popular vote. The main concern for me is that he's using this hunt for the illegal voters to remove more legal voters.
Right.
Always voters of color or Hispanics. I mean, for example, I was just in Georgia, in the Georgia 6th Congressional District. That was a straight steal. That was Jim Crow at its worst. And I confronted Karen Handel, the Republican candidate. She was Secretary of State. She was removing people from the voter rolls. In fact, she was using cross-check to bleach the voter rolls white, and then she runs in the district.
Right.
You know, these people are using these techniques for the purpose of winning elections, and that's what we have to look out for. These are mass. In other words, when they say, are there illegal aliens voting, it's not a question of, did Trump win the election?
No.
Win the popular vote, but he was denied it by these illegal aliens. That's his vanity. What is of concern is that this woman, Karen Handel, as Secretary of State, sent out hundreds of letters to Hispanic Democrats, ordering them into courtrooms to prove that they are citizens. If they wanted to vote, they'd have to take a day off and go to courtroom. One guy named Morales was required to return to court three times to prove he's an American, and his only crime is having a Hispanic last
name.
That's sickening. I kid you not.
That's sickening. And now they're trying with this Election Integrity Commission, an Orwellian name if there ever was one, they're trying to take it out of the hands of the states and nationalize it, it seems like, do it on a federal level.
Exactly. They want to do it two ways. One, they want the list so that they can expand it. In other words, let's say California refuses to join cross-check. But you're going to get all these Hispanic and African-American names by getting the California list. So people with names matching someone in California will lose their vote in another state.
Right.
The other is Kobach's attempt to create a national voter system where you'd be cross-checked, you'd have to prove your citizenship, and et cetera. You know, we'd hunt down the, you know, remember the first time we talked was about when Catherine Harris in Florida
removed
black people calling them felons. It was basically Kobach before Kobach. I mean, what she did was she got names of people convicted of crimes like Joe Smith, and that's the exact real name, and then found basically James Brown in Ohio, and then gets convicted of a crime, James Brown in Florida loses his vote. And that, so they played that game, and they matched it by race. There it was like they didn't even there it was easy to know the racial bias because it said BLA next to the names that were removed, black. So it's the same game.
But on a bigger scale. Greg Palast, this is all outlined in the book. Again, this is not new. This is something that Chris Kobach has been doing. You've been reporting on for years now. But now it's reached, fever pitch here and going on a national scale.
It's blown up like a Trump.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I shouldn't laugh. It's tragic.
I know, but that's the thing. You have to, exactly. The whole story is detailed right now, just newly posted up at The Progressive, at progressive.org. When you go there, it is the lead story. And, of course, it's in The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Greg Palast, it is always a pleasure to talk with you, and thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome, Nicole. Bye.
Bye. So Greg Palast, yeah, he is one of the great investigative reporters, and he's been telling this story for a long time. As I said, the thing that makes this so scary is they're taking it out of the realm of the state government and putting it on the federal level. This is cross-check on steroids and Orwellian Election Integrity Commission, my ass. But with that, we are out of time for this Wednesday. Tomorrow, Howie Klein is back. So we'll talk about, all this stuff. We'll talk about the Iron Stash going up against Paul Ryan. We'll talk about Bernie Sanders in 2020. And we'll find out whatever else is on Howie Klein's mind, where he's been for the last few weeks as well. As always, thank you for listening. Thanks for bearing with me. We'll do it again tomorrow right here on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. Until tomorrow. All right.